I have a new exercise routine.
Oh,
thank goodness. Man. Anything we can do to extend your reign, I think we should do.
Yeah, I don't, ever since I had a child, and it's now a 15-month-old child, I haven't had
a
lot of time.
Baby to, in it?
You know, it. It you know.
Got it.
Good old
Got
it.
Great.
I haven't had a lot of time to take care of old me and my well-being.
Sure.
But I found a way to do that. And here's the thing. I don't want to spend a lot of time. Chris Plant walks around his neighborhood for 3 hours, and that's his exercise. I ain't got that sort of time to walk around my neighbor for 3 hours.
You need something high intensity.
High intensity, high low interval. Time commitment, and something that I could theoretically do every day.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's what I'm doing. Every single day.
Wait, can we all just take a quick guess?
Oh, sure.
Are you doing, like, spinning a rope around?
Oh, that's like, good.
I've seen videos of people doing that on YouTube. It's like a big thing. You spin
I've
a
seen
rope
it where
around.
They hit the rope on the ground, like two ropes at the same time.
Yeah.
Just
I think it's
going to
be something
like lasso?
Bocce ball with your kid.
Yeah,
like, you're going to throw your kid as a bocce ball.
I mean, he's not round enough. He wouldn't roll.
Oh, why do I worry it's going to be something
just
worse?
Just sort of cage fighting? Cage
fighting?
Oh, the octagon.
Russ, we're ready.
Okay, so I walk down to the basement of my building.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I just walk all the way up to the top floor, which is 15 floors at once. And then I'm done.
Okay, so you just you go up.
Go
I
up
don't know why.
So you mocked me for walking around a neighborhood, and your answer is that you walk on. You don't even leave your building.
That's correct. And it's very dark in the stairwell. It's a very dark stairwell, and it's not scenic at all. But I am able to do it in like 6 or 7 minutes, and that feels very productive because I get a good you know, I get breathy by the end of it.
Sure, yeah,
sure. And what's that sound like? And there it is. That's you can use that sound for whatever you need, you fucking creeps. Whatever you need to use that sound for, you fucking weird creeps, nasty weirdos. Now you have it.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Russ Frustrick, and I know the best games of the week.
Hello, and welcome, everyone, to The Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in electronic interactive entertainment. It's a video game club, and just by listening, you, my friend, are a member. When I was a kid, there used to be these Brock's Pick-A-Mix stands at the grocery store, and you would have these bins that you would fill up a bag.
The chewy candies, right, Brock's?
There's lots of different – Brock's is a brand, so there's lots of different ones.
They do like a terrible candy corn.
There's a terrible candy corn, just like all candy corn.
Yeah.
There's like gumballs covered in candy. there's like gumdrops. It's a Pick-A-Mix. And the important thing is that's what we're doing today. We're filling up, we're getting our little bag, and our mom said we could fill it up halfway, and we're just making ourselves a little Pick-A-Mix.
Do you think the pandemic started in a Pick-A-Mix?
Probably.
I mean, now somebody just ate one of those jelly fruit wedges. That's how it was. Yeah.
So Chris, tell us everything about every game, Chris.
There's too many video games. Everybody said, hey, we're going to have a pandemic, you know, video game drought. It's been building up for years. And then video games was like, no, we're not. And then the people were like, but we have so much backlog. And the video games were like, I don't care. There's a trombone game. And then the people were like, okay, that sounds cool.
That sounds good, actually.
That sounds good. Yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about this week. That and so much more. But we're going to do it right after this. I just sent you guys a picture on Slack of Pick-A-Mix. Tell me that doesn't fire something deep within
you. That looks so bad.
When were you born, Justin?
There's so many different types of candy present in this kiosk. You would think they could have found one good one.
this image looks like it's from 1971. Does this ring bells for you, Justin?
I mean, not the style, the fashion. It did predate me a little bit.
Did you get a Pick-A-Mix and then go see, you know, like, Puff the Magic Dragon? What was your what were your days like?
I filled my pockets with mallow cream pumpkins and had myself a day. A little bridge mix. So those terrible Neapolitan chewables.
The Huntington Mall got the 70s in the early 90s. So you have to
respect that. No wonder kids' teeth were destroyed. Like, this looks like actual dental harm.
Yeah, they had like jelly nougats. Yeah,
oh, yum,
those were rough. Anyway.
So anyway, how are we structuring this?
We should start throwing games out there, and I'll start here with one of the best games I've played in recent memory. The game is called Trombone Champ.
Oh yeah,
and you play a motherfucking trombone.
Okay. The language seemed unnecessary, but
I just wanted to like put a little.
You're trying to get people excited about music history.
Yes. Yeah, so
music theory.
Okay. So Trombone Champ is a rhythm game, but it's not like the rhythm games you remember, because most of it, you sound terrible. I think most rhythm games, the point is to like make you feel like you have actual musical talent.
Yeah.
But in Trombone Champ, you sound constantly off key as you try to work your way through a bunch of fair use, publicly available songs like Auld Lang Syne and the National Anthem. And while this is happening, there is a me character sort of bouncing on the right side of the screen playing trombone, and it's spectacular. I can't put it down.
It seems like a... Man, parody almost isn't the right word, because Wii Music was this. Like, what we're looking at, when I first saw a video of this game, it reminded me so much of the work of the great Ravi Drums during that Nintendo press conference.
Sure.
Where he and his associates just made some really bad music together live on stage with their Mii characters. And it's nice to see somebody sort of take that ball that Mr. Drums sort of crafted himself and then made their own sort of twisted spin on it.
I think it's actually helpful to think of this as a comedy. Like, sense that, like, a lot of games mess up with comedy because they do comedy like a movie, right? Where it's like funny lines that they've written in the dialogue. But I think games work best when they're using mechanics to achieve something. And this is a comedy in the sense that when you play well, it sounds so bad and it's so funny every single time. Like,
yeah.
I was like laughing my head off playing along with the game. I thought I was doing badly until I got my rating at the end. It's like, oh, I guess that was pretty good. It sounds so... the effect of seeing it is like, I don't know, if it doesn't tickle you to see someone like absolutely bomb some John Philip Sousa solo on trombone, it's absolutely hysterical.
And I want to say, like, in addition to like sounding very hilarious, and it does, it's very clear that they came up with the core idea. This like feels like a game jam idea. And then they just sank so much time into presentation and like polishing the look and the feel of it, that it feels like way more like a premium product, even though at its core, it's almost like an art game.
Well, with a caveat in that it's very polished in that it all runs well and it doesn't have bugs and things like that. But it doesn't look like a AAA game. Like, it looks goofy as hell.
Yeah, but intentionally goofy. Like, that's
right,
the
right. I'm just saying,
like
I think that's like important because, like, comedies, take a movie, like a movie comedy looks like a good drama that actually makes it less funny somehow.
Yeah,
and
this
I think,
looks
like that this looks goofy.
This looks like a WarioWare mini game.
Yeah,
basically throughout the entire thing. So, for example, while you're playing "Old Gray Mare," classic song, a bunch of horses start just marching across the screen, and they're not like high res horses; they're just like JPEGs of horses that they found. And right. So they, you know, that's the sort of style that they're going for. It definitely fills that pocket of games like what was the Goose Game, Untitled Goose Game, where I think it gifts really well, like it's perfect for social media. And then when you play it, it's I didn't care for Goose Game, like the actual gameplay of it, but here I actually enjoy trying to get good scores in terrible generic songs. It's been very satisfying. I don't know. I think
the song choice
it.
Is so good. I mean, just saying Old Gray Mare makes me laugh. Like, what a funny song that I never think about.
They also have a running baboon joke that runs throughout, which is quite funny. There's also in the settings, I haven't actually seen this in the game. In the settings, there's an option to turn off a jump scare, and I haven't seen the jump scare yet. And that alone is terrifying me because I don't know when the jump scare is going to happen, but I'm leaving it on.
It's the scariest thing they could do. They're saying, like, there's one jump scare. But that's, like, again, it's what's so smart about it is, like, that's using, like, game mechanics, right? And as a way of being funny. Like, it's funny that there is one single jump scare that you don't know when it's coming, and they've made it scarier by warning you that there is a jump scare at some point, and you can deactivate it.
It's great. It's really good. Highly recommend it.
You can also learn about music history with collectible trading cards in the game.
Yeah, there's loot boxes in the game, not with real money, just with currency that you earn as you're playing. I believe they're called dutes. And you earn trading cards, and then if you don't like the trading card or you get duplicates, you can turn them into poops. And then the poops can be used for other trading cards. It's fucking wild. It's a weird game. I like it a lot. I think it's only on PC right now, which is kind of a drag. I played it on Steam Deck.
What method of control did you use?
Okay, so on Steam Deck, which again is not helpful because I realize most people don't have one, I used the touch pads, which basically mimic the mouse. I think if most people, if they're playing it on like a desktop or a laptop, they're going to use a mouse keyboard
situation.
I was
struggling to hit the sequences of notes well with, like, I wanted to be doing it with my thumb. You know what I mean? Like my index finger was having trouble keeping up with some of like the faster combos.
Oh, I did it with my thumb, and that, at least on Steam Deck, that worked. But
yeah.
Some people have used the gyro controls.
That would probably be good.
That's
which
fun.
I think is clever, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of poop, Slime Rancher 2?
I don't know why you would... That's the trick.
Do they poop in that game?
I thought that was like the whole thing. I thought they pooped like and then slime? you turn slime poop into a thing. Is that not how the game works?
I mean,
works?
That's maybe the grossest interpretation of what happened.
Yeah, I thought they were having babies.
No, Jesus Christ. You guys played Slime Rancher, right?
I played the first one, and I thought, don't they duplicate if you put them in the same pen together?
Okay, so Slime Rancher 2 is out now. If you have not played that or Slime Rancher 1, it is, the way I like to describe it is like if Viva Pinata was a first-person shooter.
okay, can we reference something that's not 1,000 years old that six people
this, also, didn't we reference Viva Pinata last
week?
We
did. It keeps coming up, and I feel like we're alienating the audience.
No, this is good. People should go play Viva Pinata.
Yeah, fuck that. Yeah, go play the rare...
Why are
rare...
we not allowed to talk about, you know, you can talk about film in a historical context.
Well, I roll my eyes at that, too.
Yeah. the rare Xbox One, like, bundle thing that had, like, every rare game. Has both Viva Pinata games, and they're great. So Slime Rancher is a game about owning and operating a slime farm.
I believe it's a ranch.
Okay. You go around, you have a vacuum pack that you can use to suck up slimes, and then you grow food for those slimes that you can then turn around and feed them.
Just pause right there for 1 second. So you feed them, and then what would you say happens to that food after they eat it?
Okay, fine. They create what are called plorts.
Oh, that's different.
That's different.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Because then you feed the plorts to other slimes, and you make like fusion slimes.
Gross.
And then you can sell the plorts for money. So if it was poop, they wouldn't be able to sell the poop.
A fertilizer, it sells for plenty of money.
Okay, that's fine too. Yes, so it is a farming sort of game, kind of. It's a tough game to describe, honestly, because it is about, it's got sort of the collectopedia style gameplay of a Stardew.
Like Pokemon.
Or a Pokemon, sure.
But it also, don't you feel like it has like the progressiveness of like a...
That's the hook. Yeah. It's you are constantly going around, you are finding new areas to explore. You are unlocking new upgrades for your, you know, mobility, for your vacuum pack, for your farm. For instance, you can build a corral for your slimes, and then you can shoot food into that corral, and then they will, you know, shit out their plorts. And you can go in there and suck them up, but that can get annoying because it's kind of tight space. So you can purchase, you know, a plort collector upgrade for the corral so that it will do that shit automatically for you. I love the original Slime Rancher. I have played a few hours, I think, of Slime Rancher 2, and I am not like 100% like sure of what is super new in this one.
Okay.
They've done quite a bit of streamlining. Like in the past game, you would go around, you would collect your slimes, you would harvest their plorts, you would sell the plorts for money, and then you would use those to unlock upgrades. And then there was like this separate science research sort of mechanic. Now those are both one thing. You used to have to like plop down these mechanical harvesters to collect like resources in the environment, which was annoying because then you would have to go back and, you know, find those later to collect the things from them. Now you just find them and suck them up in your vacuum pack. And I realize now that all of the things that I am describing sound like a nonsense if you did not play the original game. But I think that that is kind of telling, right? That there is not like such an enormous, like, change that the game can kind of hang its hat on. That said, it's in early access, so
right,
like who knows.
Does it look like
it looks great? It looks fantastic,
like much better than the original game, or
I don't know about much better. No,
because I remember the original game had some difficulties running smoothly at times.
Oh, I don't know. I've been playing it on Steam Deck and it's been running just fine.
Yeah,
and it's a great Steam Deck game. Honestly, I am torn after playing it for a little bit. I was torn about like even bringing it because it seems like the kind of game that I am going to want to not play anymore until it's actually out.
Yeah, like Rogue Legacy 2 situation.
Yeah, right, like there's so much there and it demands a lot of you, and there's so much, it's all about like progression and building this this thing and spending a lot of time like on upgrades and all that jazz, and the idea of doing that a little bit now and then coming back to it later when the rest of the shit is in the game the rest of the plort is in the game does not seem very appealing. But at the same time, I just really like playing Slime Rancher, and this is more of it. So
seems like a good Steam Deck game.
It's a great Steam Deck game. Yeah, I think it's maybe on Switch too. I'm not 100% sure. Honestly, this is something me and Russ have talked about. The Steam Deck has like completely swallowed up a lot of the excitement I used to get about third-party games coming to Switch, because they just run better on Steam Deck, and so that is always going to be the platform.
I know it's on Game Pass as well, for what it's
is
like.
Is it? Oh, okay. Yes. I mean, if it's on Game Pass, just get it.
You'd
be silly not to. Yeah. But also, I think if you want to hold off until it's in full release, that is a sound.
I don't think
you'd
be
too
silly not to. Money is not the only cost. I want to remind people.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Your time also has value.
Yeah. I don't know that that's the kind of attitude you can bring into Slime Rancher 2, but
if you can't allow yourself the idea that your time has value, because then it's like, why am I
literally sucking shit with a vacuum?
You're literally pushing buttons and interrupting electrical circuits.
Wow.
So, I mean, come on, man. Why don't you get outside?
Put that on
have you guys ever heard of sunflowers?
Wow. Let's put that on a fucking Besties t-shirt.
I don't know if you guys have heard, but there's music now from symphony orchestra. you know where I like to ranch slimes, guys? In a good book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. The Grapes of Wrath was basically...
There's a few slimes being ranched in that.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I'd much rather talk about the next game, because I know that there's a divisiveness about it that I'm excited to explore.
So I think we're going to talk about a little game called Shovel Knight Dig next, which is the, I want to say, second spinoff in the Shovel Knight franchise.
I mean, it depends on if you count King of Cards. Because there was
an
Cards
expansion pack. That was an expansion.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. It's quite different, but sure.
But there was the puzzle game, Puzzle Shift. I forget what that was called. Shovel Knight.
Puzzle Shift, yeah.
Puzzle Shift.
No.
And and now we have Shovel Knight Dig, which is a roguelike platformer featuring the titular Shovel Knight. And he's digging.
He is digging. It feels a lot like, I mean, if you've played Shovel Knight, it is Shovel Knight mechanics in a sort of Downwell style roguelike format. And it's, I'm really quite smitten with it. Okay. I think it has a lot of very, very clever progression systems in it. And those work really, really well with the Shovel Knight sort of formula.
Yeah, because you mentioned Downwell, which doesn't have any, like, make the game easier, like, unlocks.
Right.
Whereas this definitely does.
Yeah, for sure.
What have you found, like, what of the progression system? So, like, again, most of the playthroughs are really just, you jump in the hole, you try to survive for as long as you can, and then when you die, you more or less start from scratch. But you are making some decisions as you're playing through, like what upgrades am I picking up or what paths am I taking as you sort of go through the levels deeper.
Yeah, so there, you're going through, you're collecting gemstones, which is like the currency for the game, which you can spend like in the middle of the run, or you can hang on to it for more sort of permanent unlocks at the end of a run. There's like branching pathways that go into different levels, sort of Spelunky 2 style. There are like NPCs in a hub world that you then can go back to, and those NPCs will offer a variety of different things for you to upgrade. Like there's an armorer who has hidden templates all over the well that you're digging into. There are these relics that are like these boosters that you can not only find in the world, but you can purchase these like relic keys that you can take into a run to possibly like add new relics to your future runs. There's different weapon techniques that you can unlock by accomplishing different achievements. And the whole time, like, you have a pretty limited health bar, and it is one of those games where you kind of have to try and play perfect as much as you possibly can, because you don't have, like, an overabundance. There's not a huge amount of room for mistakes. And so it keeps the pressure on very... I think in a way that keeps the game really exciting and also just offers so many different hooks for you to chase down. I am always in the process of trying to find new armor templates to see what things I can unlock. I just unlocked one set of armor that makes it so that when I die, I can keep one of the upgrades that I have found in the run, which is fantastic.
Oh, to the next run, you mean?
To the next run. And then you can keep that running forever. Basically, I have one upgrade that there are these cogs that you can find in each level. And if you find all of them, you get like a special reward at the end of the level. I found an upgrade that makes it so that I don't have to find all the cogs. I can only find two of the three. And then... like, I'm getting the upgrades at the end of each level, and as a trade-off, like, less money spawns in, but I'm finding it much easier to, you know, get further in my runs, and so it's a trade-off. I just think it's a really clever game, and unlike a lot of the games that I have played for the show recently, like, I played enough of it to feel like I knew I could talk about it, and then I just wanted to keep playing it just because it was fun, and I was having a good time.
I played it. You've played a lot more than I have, so I'm not gonna. The one thing that sort of jumped out at me is that, because you mentioned that it feels like Shovel Knight, I thought it didn't feel. I mean, Shovel Knight feels, as a 2D platformer, feels fantastic. It's one of the best 2D platformers in terms of game feel ever. I didn't feel like this had quite that level of precision for some reason. It was like I don't know. It was hard to put a finger on, like a floatiness to it, or a. It just didn't feel as snappy to me.
It feels super snappy. I think they've changed a few things. Like, obviously, Shovel Knight was modeled after kind of the DuckTales gameplay, where you are flipping shit over with your shovel, and then you can do like a shovel bounce to jump off of enemies' heads and damage them. Now you like do that shovel bounce automatically. Anytime you jump up in the air, you don't have to like do any kind of downward button press or anything like that. And so it's really easy to kind of chain stuff together. There will be these huge like paths of dirt that when you dig through them, you can just jam on the dig button and you will just zoom through, which feels very good. I don't know. I think I agreed with you when I started playing and was having a hard time getting a foothold on the game. But once those like permanent upgrade mechanics start to reveal themselves, it became a lot easier to kind of hang with it and get much further in my runs.
Yeah,
because there really are some very transformative upgrades that you do kind of need to rely on.
And they don't really indicate, at least early on, like most of the upgrades that you have at your disposal don't sound like that thrilling. And I think that might have been like hindering my enthusiasm for it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, yeah, I mean, I hadn't unlocked the armor yet. So once that armor comes, I could see that really being making a big difference.
Yeah, it's on Apple Arcade, right?
It is, yes. Yeah.
So I mean, that seems like the best option. I mean, I know it's on, I think, PC and Switch, too?
I think it's on Switch, too, yeah. I've been playing on Steam Deck again because I saw that it was on Apple Arcade, but I feel
I didn't feel control-wise like it would be great.
I think it'd be okay because it's really just left and right and jump. And when I've played a few platformers like that on arcade, and that seems pretty doable.
Well, and then there's like special attack buttons. I don't necessarily agree. I would caution you to play with a controller, or if you're playing on Apple Arcade, there's always like a third party controller things that you can use.
Yeah, you could pair it with an Xbox controller.
Yeah, for sure. But I love it. I think it's fantastic. I love Yacht Club games. I've loved all the Shovel Knight games and weird spinoffs that they've done. The presentation and music are phenomenal.
This was Nitrome was the, I think, core developer on this, and then Yacht Club, I guess, oversaw the project.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. If you like Shovel Knight and you also like games like Downwell, or I don't think it necessarily has the richness and complexity of a Spelunky, but if you do dig games like that,
If you will.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't even. Oh, shoot. Guys, I didn't even mean to.
Hey,
how embarrassing.
Speaking of digging video games, right after the break, we're going to talk about Deep Rock Galactic.
Rock and Stone! The game that I sort of spent the most time with, because I thought it was going to be one that everybody was going to play, and I guess I'm really glad that I did. Because I was the one that played it, Rock and Stone, is called Deep Rock Galactic. And I knew nothing about this game, so let me give you the very quick pitch. There's a team of four dwarves that are sent into a system of subterranean caverns to retrieve. The mission objectives vary, but usually you're retrieving some amount of some element that you'll have mined out of the world, of the mission. And then you have to bring it back to either your ship or these things called mules, which are sort of like mobile bases. These caverns are also infested by large, like, insectoid monsters that have to be dealt with while you are doing the mining. There's so much that's cool about it. That's the basic idea, right? There's so much that's cool about it. I'm trying to get through as much as I can. There's four different roles, an engineer, a driller, a gunner, and a scout. And they all have very different skill sets, but they each have versions of similar ideas. So, like, each one has a locomotion ability. So the scout has a long-distance grappling hook. The driller can drill through, has these big, powerful drills that can drill through walls. All the walls are destructible. Everything is destructible. So, like, if you are in a cavern and you can't get to the other people, you could literally get your pickaxe out and start mining your way up to where they're at. And the driller can do that a lot faster.
Are there, like, not destructible walls as well?
Probably at the, like, outside boundaries of them. But, like, by and large, it's not like you're going to run into, like, you can basically, like, dig through whatever.
That's cool.
And the engineer, in addition to building turrets, can, like, shoot platforms. So what you see is like a lot of great working together where like the someone will see some gold on the wall, right? And they'll point it out. And then the engineer will like shoot a platform up there, right? So you can stand below it. And then the scout will use their grappling hook to like zip up there and get the ore that they need mined. So that's like the each level is very different. There's some where you're like following a big drilling machine and defending it while it drills. There's some where you're like finding fossils and like reclaiming them and bringing them back to your thing. There's also tons of like different perk loadouts and upgrades, like all that kind of stuff that you would
want. So you played online, correct?
Yes. So this is the thing. It's not, and that is not normally my bag.
I know. I'm surprised.
Right. So here's what's great about this game is I have had nothing but positive interactions. And I guess the Deep Rock Galactic community is like well known for this, right? For being like that there is an ethos in this community of like positivity. So I'll give you an example. And I read an article about like how they got to this point, but the main communication that that you use is the you have like a laser pointer, basically, where you use the laser pointer, you point at a thing. But there's also mapped to the right stick a cheer, which is literally just they raise his pickaxe and says some variation of rock and stone.
Oh yeah, you kept saying rock and stone. I wasn't sure.
It's in my head because constantly, anytime somebody brings you back to life, rock and stone, and they'll give you back a rock and stone. There is an ethos in the community of no dwarf left behind. People do not leave your ass behind. Like if the mission is done and they're all waiting in the drop pad and you get killed by a bug, those motherfuckers are going to come back for you. Like
lovely.
That is the way it works. And they're constantly saying that. Like the dwarves are pre-programmed. You don't hear a lot of voice chat. It's just a lot of dwarves affirming other dwarves for how much they want to go get these emeralds and bring them back to their ship. And like that is what really all the things are fun. But having this environment where people are just being like, there was this one time where this guy had a huge gold chunk that he needed to take back to the ship, but he wanted everybody to bless it first. And this dude had a microphone, and I don't know why he had a microphone for this, but he was insisting like it would be better luck if we would all just like salute the gold chunk because I don't want anybody to pick it up. He's like, if you don't, something bad will happen to you. I heard it from another guy. It's bad luck. And maybe something bad will happen this time, but it'll eventually happen to you. So it's really important that we all bless the gold truck, which is like, and it's bizarre. He's the only guy I've ever run into with a mic, but everyone who doesn't have a mic is like, there's no, all the resources are shared, right?
So yeah.
Everyone is working together to get all the gems that they can. Everyone wants as many people to come back as they can. A lot of the abilities sort of work well together. There's like a good synergy to them. All the classes feel very different and you level them up individually. So you're like getting better with a certain class, but you see the roles that need filled, right? So you don't have to be the one that isn't being used if you join late. There's also like one other thing that's cool that kind of helps this, that like, not loving to play with other people, there's a ton of missions that you go on and they're like, the missions are like collections of certain levels in the game. So you have to go through like these certain missions to complete the quest. And what that does is it brings advanced people back into the lower, easier areas because you have to go through it to like complete a quest line, right?
Yeah.
And so people will be, you know, they'll bring heavier hitters into your level. You're not like stuck with this level that nobody is playing.
How long does it take to like play through a level usually?
That is my one. So that is like actually my one complaint with it. And I don't think this is necessarily a problem with the game, but levels, there is a rating for like how long they think it should take. But if people get, I think there's like secret objectives that I don't know about, but I see people doing sometimes. I just shoot the bugs and get the goal, you know, but like other people have
get that money
like that. And they can run for a while. Like I've been in ones that have lasted like 20 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's 20 or 30 minutes.
I was 30 okay. minutes of the answer,
which is not bad. Right. But like my life being the way it is.
Sure.
The idea that I would have, like, it is not uncommon for me to like, just have to ghost these dudes because, you know, my mother-in-law's on the phone or there's somebody at the door or whatever. And that is my, what the,
it, are you single-handedly ruining this community? Like you're the one guy that's dropping out.
No. Cause they'll just like, they believe in me. Like they're happy to have me back.
Rocket they Spirit. Did. And then you're gone. You're AFKing.
But then
no, that sounds nice. I was worried you were going to say like an hour.
Like, no, yeah, yeah. No, that's not, I mean, a half hour is not bad.
But it is like, I hate that feeling of like, I wish there was a way to.
You don't
like,
want to disappoint.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want, it's a four-member team, right?
Yeah.
It's not like I can hide. And that you can ping, this is actually really helpful. You have a basically like a sonar that shows you the topography of the caverns in wireframe that you can bring up at any time and like see where everybody is, but also see where the other areas are in relation to you. So you can plot a digging path for like how you're going to get to those people. Which can be kind of fun to sort of chart your course.
I remember when we played, I forget the zombie game that was like Left 4 Dead. We played that together.
Back 4 Blood.
And Justin, you had a penchant to run into the evil crows that would then cause the zombie swarm to attack us.
So fun.
Is there an element of that where people could, if they wanted to, troll other people?
Not that I can think of.
I mean like, that's good.
Really, The monsters are sort of like you just get an alert that there's a swarm coming is the way it typically works, right? And then everyone is overwhelmed. Everyone drop what you're doing. We have to fend off this wave and then we'll get back to the mission. But even if like – I guess you could leave to go do mining while that's happening, but the swarm will follow you. So if you go off on your own
– Yeah, you're going to get wrecked.
Yeah, you're just going to get wrecked. So it only makes sense to try to stay together so people can revive you.
Yeah, that sounds lovely.
It's really lovely. I really encourage you guys to check it out. It is not a hard – I will say this. If you're new to it, there's enough variety – this is actually a good thing. There's enough variety in the missions where like I didn't always have a clear idea of what I was supposed to be doing. But I did understand my role, right? So I did darkness is a big thing in this game because you're in a cavern. So everybody has a store of replenishing flares that you can drop whenever, right? And you can like – that's a resource to manage. Like everyone's got to drop a bunch of flares, but the scout has a like super bright flare gun that he can attach to walls. So this is like part of your role in the team is like if you go into a dark area, it doesn't matter what our mission objective is. I know that I need to like shoot out some flares to make it so people can work in here without having to constantly drop their little
OSHA requirements. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. It's so fun.
That's great. What platform did you play it on?
I played it on Steam, but I think it's one of those that's on like
it is on basically everything. Maybe not Switch, but basically everything else.
Make sure you have the time to play a game because you don't want the guilt. I got the hang of that, I just sort of like paced myself better. You know, I didn't start a game unless I knew I was going to have an uninterrupted time. But it's so fun. It is such a bright spot. It made me feel good to play it every time. I never felt like I was letting people down. I just felt like I was, you know, part of a team. And it was really, really cool.
I want to play it.
You should. You'd really like it. We should play it together.
Can I play it?
That sounds great. It's kind of a brothers thing.
No,
I'd love to play with you guys. You guys are my
brothers. Thank you.
How many players can play at one time?
Four. Rock and Sound.
Perfect. There's four of us. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's kind of why I thought other people were going to play it, honestly.
I tried.
I thought it was going to be something of a centerpiece.
Well, I will say fans have been asking for us to talk about this game for years, so I'm glad we finally got around to it, and maybe we'll have more to say about it.
I'm
going to
bully you guys into doing an episode on it. It's so fun.
It does sound dope.
It sounds fun.
Chris Plant.
I have been playing the Diofield Chronicle. Has anyone else been playing this and or even heard of it?
I've heard of it.
The Ronnie James Diofield Chronicle, which I don't know.
God. I've heard of it because you recommended it to me, and I saw some reviews, and then I watched some videos, and I was like, this does not seem like my sort of game.
Holy shit, looking at the art for this made me feel like I'd been shot with an elephant dart. Just like, instantly, my body collapsed. All interest vacated my body.
Justin, I'm going to make it so much worse.
Look at these guys!
Yeah.
If I had to describe the genre, it is RTS... tactic strategy MOBA-esque.
JRPG, right?
Yeah, and some JRPG. I mean, I cannot believe that I tried this game and that I like it that much. I cannot think of a game that seems more not my type of game. And yet, here I am, because this game is super fun. Square Enix is really releasing like a trillion games. I think like the answer is like actually like 9 games or something this fall. Just a ridiculous amount of stuff that they're clearing out. And a lot of them are these kind of like weird experimental projects. It feels like they're trying to figure out what they want to do next. So they're just doing a lot of medium-sized things. And this is one of those. And the way it works is like picture a tactical RPG, but instead of a grid, when I say that, I mean like Final Fantasy Tactics or
Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem or XCOM. But instead of a grid, it is just like an open 3D space. And you move your characters around in real time, and you basically like direct them on where to go as if you're like controlling an RTS battlefield. You have at least four at the beginning. And then you can fire off their special moves as they effectively like accumulate as their bars charge, right? Which sounds very, very simple. And it is. I spoke with the dudes from Into the Aether, and they're like, yeah, it's like a PlayStation 3 game that just happened to come out this year. I think that's kind of right. That said, what I love about it is it just feels really fun. Like, it feels great immediately hopping into these battles. And from, like, the drop, you have powers where, like, a dragon the size of a skyscraper flies in and spits, like, a world-ending comet at your enemies. I mean, you immediately feel comically overpowered. And here's the most important part of all of these games. There's basically no story. I mean, it's there, but the game throws you into the gameplay right away. Right away, it wants you like learning how the game works. It wants you fighting. It wants you upgrading. It wants you buying new weapons. It wants you doing the game of it all, which for me, especially with Square Enix, anything, I feel like, hey, I'm really enjoying this game, and it's like very cool, but we do have an hour and a half of story to tell you. And then I bounce. So I think this is like, it's kind of the opposite of the Fire Emblem Frush, which I think like people really, really love the story. And I think the gameplay is also great. But this feels like it's very much for people who just really want to get into the meat of the game. I do think you would like it if you tried it. The other thing is, it's like just hilarious how much it raises the stakes. The first mission is you're like fending off bandits. The second mission, zombies appear. The third mission, you're like under a volcano. Mm-hmm. It's all very silly.
Sounds stressful.
Yeah, I guess my initial reaction, A, the art doesn't really do anything for, but that's fine. I mean, sure. I get it. There's an aesthetic. My initial question would be like, how does the RTS benefit it? Because generally I like really don't like RTS games, and I'll name a few. Like the core of like Pikmin stresses me the hell out. Even like StarCraft, stuff like that stresses me out because I feel like I'm spinning plates and I don't really like doing that.
Yeah, it never felt like an RTS to me in that sense because you have so few people to manage.
Yeah.
So it's really easy. There's like one button that you can hold down to move all the characters at once, which works a lot of the time. There's another button that kind of creates a little circle of influence. So you can control whichever characters are inside of that. So I don't know. Within like a half hour, I felt like it felt more like I was one character, but controlling four characters in the game. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't feel like I was having to like manage like an entire army. I felt like I was just using what was available to me to perform the one thing that I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, that's why I always like Fire Emblem, is because at least for the like first half of the game, you're only dealing with like 8 or 9 units at a time. But it was turn-based, so I could like really plan out my moves, whereas this definitely seems a little more,
So the other thing here is when you're in the world, you can see a circle around each enemy, which is when they'll be aware of you. So as long as you're not in a circle, you can kind of plan out your strategy. So a lot of the attacks that I did, some of them are, some of them aren't.
Okay.
But even with that, there's usually like a wiggle room to get around them. So a lot of my attacks were, you know, sending people around the map and letting them like go and collect some treasure while the slower people like hung out at the front of the line. And then by the time the fast people on horseback or whatever could get to the back of the flank, we would perform a pincer maneuver from the film Tenet.
Yes,
it would go great.
You mean a temporal pincer?
Yes, we would perform a temporal pincer. It's a delight. I don't expect any of you to play it. I think it's a hidden gem. I think it's one of those games. Like in 3 years, people will be like, oh yeah, I can't believe we got that game that year. And then they won't talk about it.
If it was a hidden gem, I would have found it by now. Me and my dwarf pals have been pretty thorough.
Rock and Stone,
yes.
Justin, tell me about Steel Rising.
A very much briefer than my last spiel. I did just want to mention Steel Rising because I like Souls type games. And Steel Rising, despite the, truly terrible title. I mean, truly terrible.
I mean, there are worse titles.
Yeah, it's
the Diophil Chronicle.
It's a Diophil Chronicle.
Jumps to mind.
Hey.
Steel Rising is one of those. It is a Soulsborne game. I think the real draw here is aesthetics. You are a clockwork warrior who wears a powdered wig. Mm-hmm. And she looks radical. If you can look at images of Aegeus from Steel Rising, you can customize her look some, but the entire game, France has been overtaken by a clockwork army, and that because they were created to serve people and then the clockwork machines took over.
Classic.
There is one clockwork warrior that is still loyal to Marie Antoinette. And that's Aegeus. And even Marie Antoinette's creeped out by her kind of.
Mm.
But she sets her on this mission to basically save France from the people that are taking over it. So it looks really, really neat. And the monsters are all – the enemies are all these automatons too. So they you can see how they're constructed. And they have really cool movement patterns and things like that. Mechanically, there's not a ton of innovation going on here. There's refillable bullets, which is kind of interesting. Which I guess other games have those, but there's
When you get to a checkpoint, you just get more bullets, basically.
No. You there's guns that use ammo, basically. That Bloodborne is the closest point of comparison here.
There's
the
guns that use ammo.
You have to collect it. It's not. It's a resource that you have to manage.
That's innovative.
But the ammo is also used by other abilities.
Oh, you have
this thing called alchemical capsules or something.
Got it.
And those are used for various abilities. And each weapon has sort of a alternate ability. You can also overload enemies by hitting them with a lot of light attacks. They'll basically become stunned. One thing that's kind of interesting is there's a sort of stamina bar, but it's representing Aegeus overheating because she doesn't have stamina, obviously, being a clockwork automaton. And you can basically hit a button when your stamina is out and use a coolant that will refresh your stamina at the cost of your health. So it'll hurt you, but you can get a couple more hits in if that's all you need to.
Yeah, that's cool.
Close the deal. It's fun if you like these, if you like the aesthetic, if you like the era. It feels different that way. It doesn't feel different enough. It's just one of those where you start mapping one to one, these are the Estus flasks. These are the, this is the souls.
The bonfire.
It's cool. I was having fun with it, but I didn't necessarily feel like I've got to see what happens next. It does look outrageously cool, though.
We got one more game. Hoops, I think you are the other person who played this. Squad 51 versus the Flying Saucers.
Yeah, this is an interesting one.
I think if this game had come out 2008 on XBLA, it would have been the biggest game of the season. People would have been over the moon. It kind of is doing what Cuphead did with old school animation. It is doing with old school sci-fi matinee film. It is just a relatively straightforward sci-fi scrolling shooter, 2D scrolling shooter. You are a plane and you are shooting at UFOs, and that's the entire game. But the look, the aesthetic, the vibe is really what takes it home. They basically make the game itself look like late 1930s, early 1940s sci-fi matinees. And when I say that, I don't mean the 1950s, I don't know, arch sci-fi. I mean hey, movies are black and white and we just learned how to get talkies going.
Yeah, there's a real newsreel vibe to it.
Yes.
To the treatment of the graphics and things like that.
And for the most part, like the acting, the sound design, they do a good job recreating it. This isn't like for movie nerds like Guy Madden level of recreation of old film, but it's pretty good. I would say it is closer to recreating old film than like Sky Captain of Tomorrow, which,
right,
you know, I think I tried to blur the lines between old and new. But the story is like there's just enough there that it's fun to watch. You get, you know, a little short bit of the movie, I don't know, every two or three levels. Would that sound right, Justin? It's not like every stage. And then you get thrown into this shooter, which is a really solid shooter. There are tons and tons and tons of upgrades that you collect basically constantly, and you can just keep adding them on as you go. You start with like one upgrade spot. You probably have like 20 by the end. And it has a good sense of getting stronger and stronger as your little ship fights bigger and bigger alien vessels. And it spices it up like a fair amount where, you know, at first you're just flying through the open sky shooting UFOs, but then you're flying into a mine, and then suddenly you're like having to zig and zag inside and outside of giant UFOs to destroy them. So it's not just the same thing over and over again. It's difficult, but as far as shooters, like side-scrolling shooters go, it's pretty chill. And
are there difficulty settings? Like, could you play it on easy?
There's a normal and a hardcore. The hardcore, I do not recommend at all unless you're extremely hardcore.
Griffin is true gamer.
All of you, I think of as hardcore shmup players.
I did like how the top and bottoms of the screen aren't necessarily fixed. So like there's massive ships, but you can kind of go around them when the UFOs start turning on their axis to where they become like big obstacles for you to try to avoid. That's kind of cool. I liked it. I felt like it was I needed just like a little bit more mechanically that felt like something new or something that I hadn't experienced before. The gameplay parts of this are all pretty straight down the middle.
Do you think it was just like, oh, we have the aesthetic and the aesthetic sort of stands on its own?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. But it's also like, it's kind of hard to parse a lot of the time because it is all sepia toned. So like when the screen gets pretty crowded, and this is, I think, by design, when the screen gets pretty crowded, it can be hard to pick out your ship amongst everything else. And I think that maybe that's why they're trying to keep it as sort of like simple as they, not simple in the meaning of like not complex, not easy, but it was definitely cool, and I dug it. I just felt like I don't know, I needed something a little bit more to justify like coming back repeatedly, I was getting murdered pretty bad, and I did not have enough fun going through those early areas to kind of keep pushing forward.
It felt to me like a great proof of concept for this studio and the team that's making it. Like, I feel like whatever they make after this will be really fantastic. I think this is honestly great, but it's great because it's two of the things that I love. I love these like 80s, early 90s side-scrolling shooters. And that I love the weird film recreation stuff that it's doing. But I think like, unlike Cuphead, I think Cuphead's old school animation is like, I don't know, just more recognizable to people, probably because of Disney type of stuff. So yeah. I think it has like a more immediate appeal. Also, Cuphead is like just so polished, where this, it does have some rough edges. Like, I mean, an example is they had to use CG sets for some of the film sequences, and it like kind of breaks the illusion a little bit. And then in the game, there are times where they really try to make it look like, oh, you are a actual like model plane flying over a, you know, green screen, or I guess a projection screen from back then, of like newsreel footage of a location. But then every now and then there'll be a CG base or whatever. And that, again, it kind of takes, it defeats whatever the larger goal is. And I get why they had to do it. Like, hand making every set in this game would have taken forever. And I'm sure it's like, hey, good scope management, but It is why I would like to see. This is like the type of studio where I don't want them to get acquired by Microsoft. I don't want everybody to be acquired. But I would like them to have like that support from a studio that size where they could like give them the money they need to actually take a bigger swing.
Yeah.
Wow. Should we do reader mail?
Sure.
Okay, reader mail. A few quick questions. This one from Mike. What was the first real horror game you played?
Does Seventh Guest count as a horror game?
I think so.
Yeah.
Then that would be it. Seventh Guest. Very weird FMV game when I was probably 7 years old when I played that game. Hey, appropriate.
The first game I can remember scaring me was Willy Beamish. For the Sega
CD. That is a scary one.
Willy Beamish was a very cartoony Sierra Online sort of adventure game. Where you're a little boy named Willie Beamish who had a pet frog.
Broderbund, if memory serves.
And he was just a brat. He was a real piece of shit. And the stakes of that game are so horrific. Where like if you get detention, you get sent off to military school. And then at one point you have a babysitter who turns into a vampire bat who like carries you away into the night. And that made me very scared. But also the frog's name was Horny. So like, what were we doing back in the early 90s?
Yeah, how's it going?
How's it going for everyone back then? You can push your little sister so hard on the swing that she like flies off and like probably dies. Pretty cool game, I guess. Willy
First
Beamish.
One I ever played was a really, truly wild one. The Friday the 13th NES game I bought at Budget Pharmacy, remember?
Christ alive. Sure.
Remember, there was a, Griff, you remember up on Fairfax?
It
was
like, sure.
It was, man, renting games used to be such a thing. And our mom knew nothing about video games, right? So, but if they were going to have like adults over or something, she would rent us a game from the Budget Pharmacy or Cummings Rent-A-Center. And she would have no clue. So it was an absolute crapshoot what my mom would bring back for us to play. This was the 80s. She brought at one point, one time I remember she brought Centipede. I was like, fucking hell.
What am I going to do with this? With
Centipede for two hours. Unbelievable. But one of the ones she brought back was, for whatever reason, Friday the 13th. I must have talked her into it, if memory serves. But that is a really hilarious game where you're like going room to room as a camp counselor. And it is like 90%. Nothing is happening. Like nothing. There's not like rampant sex or other, Friday the 13th style activities. You're wandering around looking for Jason. And then if you find him, maybe you have a weapon and you try to kill him and maybe you don't and you run away. But he was scary though.
I was like genuinely scary when
because
he show
you
up.
Spend so much time with him not being there.
Yeah.
That when he does show up, you're like, oh God, it's Jason.
Yeah, it was bad.
Why am I looking for this dude? He's so much bigger than me.
The box art for this game is like maybe my favorite box art from the NES era. It's really good.
It's really good.
It's like full Trapper Keeper, except for like Jason with an axe busting through it.
It looks like a Jason Trapper Keeper. Like if your kid was like a little bit more alternative, like they didn't want a bunch of sports cars and things like that. I want Jason.
At the top, it says interactive video games, but interactive is spelled like entertainment. You know you're going to have fun.
There's also 2D segments too. Don't you love that NES thing where it's like, hey, why, we should try to make two different games and put them into one. There was that one.
The Goonies game was like that.
Yeah, there was one called Rescue that was the embassy mission. Where you would do like a sniper section. You remember this one, Griffin? You would do like a sniper segment.
Yeah, for
and then
sure.
You would run around a first person in a building. And then there was a side scrolling action thing where you hid from spotlights and stuff. That game.
Gotta mix it up.
Yeah.
Mine is just Splatterhouse, which you can play on Switch right now. Yeah, Mosey discovered that on some like video game mix collection on his Switch. And at first I was super proud that he just happened to discover Splatterhouse. And then I watched him play and I was like, you know what? No, this probably is not a good
thing. Not great.
For a 4-year-old. not cool. You can punch people so hard that they explode into organs.
Friday the 13th was made by Atlas.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? They also made Quirk for the Game Boy. God, Atlas beats ass.
Very quick question from Emmy. Is Chris Plant going to watch the Nier Automata anime series? Yes.
Of course.
Definitely.
Was there any doubt?
There no doubt, because apparently the story is a little bit different, so you know I gotta get caught up on that lore.
Maybe they cut out the little annoying boy from the storyline, and I'll be more interested.
Can you ask this next one real quick? Because I just want to make a quick pitch.
Alex asks, what are good, unsettling, spooky games that aren't out to give me a heart attack, but definitely fit the spooky, eerie vibes?
I just wanted to very briefly make a pitch for... there are a ton of adventure games from like the mid-90s. And I know that I push FMV stuff a lot here. Not just FMV stuff, but like Phantasmagoria. There's a lot of like adult adventure games that Sierra did. The Seventh Guest and 12th... what is it? Seventh Guest?
13th Hour or something?
No, 11th, Seventh Guest, 11th Hour. 11th Hour. 13th something is the new one. But... they have a really cool, like a lot of those games from that time period with the beginning of like the more sophisticated MIDI audio and a little bit of voice acting. Some of those have a really cool, creepy vibe without being like all about jump scares. The ones like Harvester and Stalker 2 from that same time period definitely like meet that criteria, I think.
I think Luigi's Mansion series is right there. Costume Quest, I don't think the games are fun, but just being in the world is great. I think there's an Amazon animated series. And if you like old, old games, my number one rec, Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that.
Or Fester's Quest.
None of those are
fit.
Spooky or eerie.
Yeah.
What are you talking? They're all
Do you
like
think Costume Quest is you watch Costume Quest and you're like, oh, well, chill,
no,
chill
but it's
my
got
spine.
The
that gets us like a banana.
It's like Halloween stuff vibe. For people who don't want to be scared.
Yeah,
yeah.
They clearly said they want unsettling. Okay, listen.
Hocus Pocus.
Zombies ate my neighbors.
They ate
it's
their
in the title.
Their neighbors are dead. They're not coming back from that.
Okay, if we want something that's like not fully scary but unsettling, remember that Little Nightmares game we played?
Oh
yeah, that works.
That's a good
Limbo,
one.
That was kind of scary,
like,
though.
Thank
like,
you.
Limbo, that would be good.
Yeah,
yeah Limbo. You. Anyway.
And then...
what's that one that Tequila Works did? The
Oh, those games are fun. They made two of them. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's gonna... The
oh, Royale no.
Write in and tell us.
Somebody's just yelling at us right
Sexy
now.
Sexy Brutale.
Sexy Brutale, thank you.
Oh, I was thinking of the tequila, the Japanese tequila studio.
Oh yeah. I mean, they have good ones too. Okay.
Last question from David. With the rise of legitimately good video game animes, which IP, big or small, would you like to see in gritty anime form? Never. I think let's cut gritty. I think just anime form.
Viva Piñata.
Do I have to watch it if I request it, or can it be more like...
It's good that it's out there.
Fester's Quest.
Adam's Family would be perfect for an anime, for what it's worth.
It would be a great anime.
Yeah. This is like a tricky
question.
I mean,
Dark Souls, I guess?
After that Elden Ring manga, I'm like super into seeing what they would do.
Yeah.
Could be really good.
I like that. I'm okay with that. I would be very curious what a Call of Duty anime would look like, but that's just morbid curiosity, not that I think it would be good.
Maybe like Destiny. I think
Dishonored world is what I would watch an anime.
I like that.
Like that.
That would be good. Same with Prey. Really anything Arcane.
Yeah, they make really good.
Have y'all watched any of the Cyberpunk? I'm assuming that this is the... Is it okay? Is it good?
Yeah, it's great. Do not watch it in with your kids, like, even remotely near.
Oh,
room.
Bro, we were fucking, boy howdy, big ups. I forget what we were looking up. We were looking up, like, Smash Brothers, like, stage builder mechanics and controls and stuff, and it loaded up some wiki website, and it played an ad for that show where somebody
Brothers.
Got, like, cut the fuck in half and blood shot everywhere.
Oh.
And Henry was like, you should not be watching videos like that. And I was like, it's an advertisement. I would never.
yeah, it's a lot, but it's great. Hey, we emptied the reader mailbag.
Perfect.
Should we do some honorable mentions?
Okay, so we have the following people to thank for reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Ryan Lane, Can You Believe It? That's a funny name. Ultrama.
That's
and
fucked up, Ross.
What?
That's someone's name.
Is it? Oh, I mean.
Somebody's name,
they
man.
Lucked out. And Mystery Wizard, thank you for writing reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to everyone else for sharing the show and talking about it and doing all sorts of great things. Chris Plant, what did we talk about this week?
Please grant me one more week of playing Deep Rock Galactic guilt-free. Please. It's all I want is for you to say Rock and Stone, and then we'll all play it. And it'll be the most
I just downloaded it, baby.
This is what we talked about this week.
I know, but it's
we're going to get to what we're talking about next week.
We just barely scratched the surface.
This week, we talked about Trombone Champ, Slime Rancher 2, Shovel Knight Dig, Deep Rock Galactic, The Deerfield Chronicles, Steel Rising, and Squad 51.
It sounds like you're saying Deerfield like an adorable baby.
Deerfield.
The Deerfield Chronicles.
Squad 51 versus the Flying Saucers. Next week, we're going to talk about something mysterious. Will it be more Deep Rock Galactic? I don't know. It could be.
Just commit to it so everybody can play Deep Rock Galactic with us.
Whatever it is, it's going to be great. Rock and Stone.
Justin, you can't end the show with Rock and Stone. You need to end it normally.
Well, I will probably still say Rock and Stone at the end. That's going to do it for us for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And be sure to join us again next week for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!